We'll do the before lecture chant. An unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect Dharma is rarely met with even in 100,000 million hundred million kalpas. Having it to listen to and remember and accept, I vow to taste the truth of the Tathagata's words. I beg your pardon, there was a being licking my toes, and I couldn't think where I was. Norman asked me to read this before I give my talk. Hi, dear Sangha members. Before Jean begins the evening's discussion of the sutra, I wanted to apologize for a mistake I made last week. Thanks to Merrill Collette from Tucson, a longtime and learned Zen person, for correcting me. You will remember that in the past, Gregory Wonderwheel, also an astute Zen person, often corrected my mistakes. But Gregory has gone beyond this world now and can't do it anymore. So I'm especially grateful to Merrill. I feel badly about the mistake. I said last week that Samantabhadra Bodhisattva rides on a lion. This is not the case. Manjushri Bodhisattva rides on a lion. Samantabhadra Bodhisattva rides on an elephant. Merrill sent me several photos that show this clearly. Actually, I know this perfectly well. But in my later years, I am often forgetting and getting mixed up. And I was so enthusiastic about Samantabhadra, I projected him onto the lion. I consider this a big mistake, and I'm glad to have been corrected. It is really bad for me to make mistakes like this, and I hope you will forgive me. I was pretty convincing. I was pretty convincing, I suppose, in explaining why these passages in the sutra were meant to reflect the practice of Samantabhadra, when in fact they were meant to reflect the practice of Manjushri Bodhisattva, the Bodhisattva of wisdom that cognizes emptiness. I'm afraid I often make mistakes, and I hope I do not give you the impression that I don't. I am always embarrassed and chagrined when my mistakes are pointed out to me, but I'm grateful. So if in the future Merrill or anyone else notices my mistakes in teachings or in conduct, please don't hesitate to bring them up. And thanks for your kindness. Yours, Norman. At Tassajara last week, one of our Sangha Week participants told us about a very moving Dharma talk that she had recently heard. It went like this. The monk entered into the temple, bowed to the Buddha, sat down, bowed to the assembly, and said, "Breathe in, breathe out. Let go." That was the whole talk. Another student told us that she'd asked her teacher, "Why do you meditate?" And the teacher responded, "To see the purple flowers on the side of the road when I walk to town." In that email that Norman sent me earlier this week, He hoped that we would do some group chanting of this flower ornament scripture. So I'll talk for about 20 minutes and then we can hear some of it chanted by some of our Sangha members. Then share impressions with others in maybe a breakout group or in the large discussion group. And we'll see how much of this glorious sutra we can enter into. On this last Wednesday evening, in the closing moments of Dharma seminar, Norman asked, "How is this striking you so far? How does it strike your heart? Not your mind, not whether it makes sense or not, but is it going into your heart in some way?" Various responses were offered, some with a mention of how much repetition there is in it, which seemed to me inarguably true. But then when Philip Olson said, "I don't think it's repetitive," I thought, "Really? Not repetitive? You're not serious, Philip." But I looked closely into his little Zoom box. I saw he was smiling, nodding, and he seemed so happy and assured, as if he was having a good time. No problem with repetition for Philip. Nope. And in that moment, I was freed, if only for a little short time, from my own habitual way of thinking, my automatic assumption that my experience of difficulty or annoyance with the repetition would be the same, or at least close to the experience of others. Imagine, surprise, not everyone has the same response I do when reading the Mahayana Sutras. But then I thought, well, maybe it's really not repetitive for Philip. And maybe it's not repetitive to others of us either. Maybe the repetition's not a problem for me. And maybe this opinion I call mine doesn't really matter at all. And this stuffy old deluded mind cave called Sean Evans might just open to some new unclassified information, some fresh air, some light. So maybe we've all had in our lives those brief moments of how one ingrained habitual pattern, maybe like an automatic assumption of our own knowingness, often followed by its close companion of, "I doubt that's true. I know better." Maybe we've all had that. And maybe we've all had that moment too when we've seen it illuminated and actually felt it shift and open in our bodies. Wasn't a huge revelation. It wasn't entirely new that not everybody agrees with me, but noticeable enough to want to share it with you as we accompany and assist each other in any way we can to alleviate the pain of suffering. These habits of mind can be so painful, so limiting. So thank you, Philip. And thank you, repetitive bodhisattvas, for teaching me. So as maybe all of us are letting go of some of our habits and limited ways of thinking, what are we entering into in this realm of reality of chapter 39? The flower ornament scripture, Gundavyuha Sutra and the Avatamsaka Sutra. Norman told us in one of his talks that the sutra was not written down in the Buddha's lifetime, probably 400 years later, and that those who wrote down the sutra were less trying to convey teachings or parables than they were trying to enact an imaginative experience in those who read the sutra. An experience of the vastness of the cosmos, the vastness of the teachings, and the vastness of our human life. An imaginative description of what's really going on for us every day in our life. Vast space, vast time. The whole of the truth is in fact right here, every moment, in every place. And then he reminded us, I think it was last Wednesday also, that bodhisattvas see this world as a dream that encloses a dream, and a dream that leads bodhisattvas, us, into compassion and omniscience, complete openness. And Thomas Cleary, or Thomas Clearly, as my computer spell check calls him, calls this flower ornament scripture a hologram, a magnificent three-dimensional image of this bodhisattva dream enclosing a dream and projecting this dream into a hall of mirrors like the one asked for by Empress Wu. He posits how the importance of the structure of this scripture might have something to offer to modern investigation into the holographic nature of the brain and its linear and simultaneous modes. I know that's a lot to take in. I'll repeat it. He thinks it might have something to offer, this structure, this holographic structure, to modern investigations into the brain, its nature, its linearity, and its simultaneous modes. To consider even the purpose of knowledge in the context of the life of enlightening beings. Thomas Cleary obviously believed in enlightening beings. So, this sutra that he so beautifully translated is a dream and a hologram, and it's the Buddha's cosmic vision of the universe with possible implications on the whole of time and space and civilization. Norman told us the Buddha doesn't see the world in the same way we do. Really? Entering into this realm of reality offers us many opportunities to delight. Yeah, to delight, not to be annoyed like I was in the cosmic imagery, to leap out of the old limiting habits and immerse in wonder. We can be brides and grooms of amazement, to meet a myriad of totally out of the box wowza teachers, enlightened and also enlightening beings, flying around everywhere, compassionate and omniscient, creatively and courageously motivated, each opening to the sufferings of this Saha world of endurance. Each teacher giving sadhana their own special bodhisattva practice, helping sadhana to develop and deepen his wisdom. And we know that the final one that sadhana will meet ultimately is Maitreya, the Buddha of friendliness and kindness, the coming Buddha of the new era. Something we can remember during this time of cruelty and fear. Something to give us inspiration and courage as we meet the future. I'm remembering how Thich Nhat Hanh used to always say, the next Buddha will be the Sangha. So Cleary has laid out this audience for the flower ornament scripture, consisting of enlightening beings, which we were told mean bodhisattvas, those in the process of becoming enlightened, not yet enlightened. They're all different places in the ranks of fruition of Buddhahood, in the ocean of knowledge, of essence. He says, all of whom are on one vehicle, the humans, the celestials, the spirits, all of the same faculties entering the stream of Buddha knowledge. Great equanimity. The scripture, says Cleary, is expounded directly to those of supremely great hearts, like all of us and all of you, all of everyone, everywhere. Supremely great hearts. And the various teaching methods all lead into this ocean of fruition of knowledge and truth. The avenues of teaching are clear. The guiding mirrors are evident. Clary asks us to read through with this kind of contemplative mind, illuminating the scripture as we go along, the mind opening up to understanding, the clouds dispersing from the sun of knowledge. And suddenly, he says, you will ascend the peak of wonder, surveying the ocean of knowledge. And the two views of ordinary and holy will be washed away by the water of concentration. And the two gates of compassion and wisdom will appear through the spiritual body. Is this peak of wonder real? In one of the talks, Norman told us that Mahayana Buddhism is always saying that by virtue of the fact that we are animated by, or maybe we could say that we actually are consciousness, consciousness Buddhas, we are real. I am saying the bodhisattvas in chapter 39 are real too. They greet us and walk with us through those two gates, compassion and wisdom, going side by side with us in continuous practice, accompanying all beings on the path, ascending the peak. A Zen friend asked me once, do you really believe in bodhisattvas? I said, yes, of course, indeed I do. And I read her the opening paragraph of chapter 25 in the Lotus Sutra. And the Buddhas asked, O world-honored one, for what reason is the Bodhisattva Avalokiteshvara called observer of the sounds of the world? Remember, Avalokiteshvara hears with their eyes and sees with their ears. And the Buddha answers, if incalculable hundreds of thousands of myriads of millions of living beings suffering pain and torment, hear of this Buddha, one who observes the sounds of the world and single-mindedly calls upon the name Bodhisattva who observes the sounds of the world, shall straightway heed their voices and all will gain deliverance and be free of suffering. So my faith in Avalokiteshvara is the reason I chose the name for the Point Reyes Sangha, Heart of Compassion. She is our matron saint. So tonight we're going to read this sutra to be and be with all the bodhisattvas to help us breathe in and breathe out and let go of our usual routine ways of being to really see the cobalt blue of the sky, to dance with the pink and orange sunset clouds, to hear the magic of music, behold the beauty of the world, and share it with all beings. Sudhana's encounters can help us let go of our habits of analyzing, sense-making, comparing, othering, to deeply feel our interconnected relatedness with all of these myriad enlightening beings who assembled to hear Manjushri in the Jetta Grove and are now right here on this fantastic spiritual pilgrimage with Sudhana, this outstanding boy of wonder who meets a rich diversity of teachers with us. So we're also going to be able to observe the sounds, to observe and hear the ancient text as a learning experiment, releasing some of those locked gates in us about how and what we practice, to experience the practice of contemplative chanting, reading, and enjoying our imagination as one of the key sites of spiritual transformation, as one Zen poet we know calls it. To be fully alive and to fully connect with our heart and our spirit and see the purple flowers by the side of the road, not to transcend the body, not to deny the feelings of our earthly experience, but instead to experience embodiment and unity by meeting the teachers and going along on the journey, chanting and walking, breathing in and breathing out. So none of these teachers, just to say, claims to hold the whole truth, and none of them tries to bind Sudhana to a given system of dogma or to keep him as a follower. Many of them teach in surroundings and formats that are not overly associated with what's conventionally thought of as religious or any fixed system or scope of consciousness. And yet, in order to carry out their work of assisting others to awaken to the full potential of mind-heart, many of them know it may be necessary to operate partly within the field of some restriction in order to purposely bridge boundaries of culture and religion. So we immerse now in contemplative reading to experience what these teachers share, these teachings that cut through views and anxieties conditioned by culture and personal history. Some of it cuts through and lets go of language based on accumulated mental habit. We're looking to reach beyond the bounds of perceptions, and we can observe how we learn, how we share the Dharma, just as we do in seminars each week, through breakout groups and group discussions. Asking ourselves, are we really real? Are we equanimous as the earth? Are we by nature compassionate and friendly? Facing up to all the states of being, seeking the sphere of those who realize thusness. Are we such teachers and students who arouse and embody the mind of enlightenment? This mind of great compassion. This unity with all beings. So as an end note, before we hear from a couple of our Sangha members who will chant excerpts from different teachers in the text. I wanted to say this. We may come upon many teachers in our lifetime. A few, or even one, might be an extraordinary blessing. Some don't fit the usual profile of a teacher, and they appear like a comet speeding through the sky for a moment, or maybe an hour, bestowing a flash of insight, and then they disappear. Others last a lifetime and beyond. Some just walk by us for a brief moment. Some are teachers born to us as children or raised with us as siblings. Some are parents who teach us or do not teach us the basic skills of survival. Some save us from drowning, and others teach us about how to smell danger, how to pay attention to our gut intuition. And others, especially those teachers in our spiritual life, help us gaze into that mirror of mirrors with acceptance and compassion, omniscience. To learn how to love ourselves and each other, to plant roots of goodness and cultivate awakened hearts, to forgive mistakes, ours and others, to apologize and take responsibility when we cause suffering or harm, to be humble, to be kind, and to let go. So tonight, we're going to start with Roberta, who has generously offered to lead on Thursday mornings after 7:30 sitting. A chanting group of this particular sutra. And there'll be an announcement posted on the website about it. But now, as we start the pilgrimage, get your pens and pencils ready. I chose four encounters with four different teachers for you to listen to. Each of the readers is going to bring their own expressive style to the chanting. And we'll be listening to them with our whole being. And I'm asking you to jot down a word or a phrase or an image from each one that strikes you as important. Not a whole big paragraph or a whole big thought, just something that sparks you. It somehow feels important. You just want to put down on the paper to save for later. We know that Sudhana has started off with one wonderful bodhisattva who welcomes him just as all the others do. And he says, "Son, from this universal light in which is concentrated the information of all sense objects, I have attained mindfulness of the Buddhas. By revelation of the bodies in the Buddhas, each Buddha sitting cross-legged, filling the cosmos, who have attained the means of mindfulness of Buddhas by entering into the service of untold Buddhas, appearing in a single point." It's the first one he speaks to. Mindfulness monk. And then he sends him off to another person, Sagaramega, who's described as a monk who will tell Sudhana of the immense, intense power of roots of goodness, and to share with him the great cause of the illumination of the vehicle of universal salvation. And then finally, the first one I chose was Supratishita, who tells Sudhana about the realization of going in and out of the unobstructed door of liberation, discovering the light of knowledge called ultimate non-obstruction. And so we're grateful to have our first reader be Roberta, because we know she's going to help us by being an example, and also just by her kindness to lead us in the first one. So Shufi's going to, I think, first spotlight Roberta for a moment and then share your screen with reading number one.
Noble one, I've set my mind on supreme enlightenment, but I do not know how an enlightening being is to seek the qualities of Buddhas, how an enlightening being is to acquire the qualities of Buddhas, how an enlightening being is to accumulate the qualities of Buddhas, how an enlightening being is to cultivate the qualities of Buddhas, how an enlightening being is to actualize the qualities of Buddhas, how an enlightening being is to act in accord with the qualities of Buddhas, how an enlightening being is to assemble the qualities of Buddhas, how an enlightening being is to contemplate the qualities of Buddhas, how an enlightening being is to clarify the qualities of Buddhas in order to accomplish all the tasks of enlightening beings, how an enlightening being is to approach and follow the qualities of Buddhas. Noble one, I hear that you give instructions to enlightening beings. Please tell me how an enlightening being is to set to work on the Buddha teachings, not to lose sight of Buddha, whatever one is doing, not to lose sight of enlightening beings so as to be always in contact with reality, always to be involved with the Buddha teachings so as to be at one with the roots of goodness of all enlightening beings, always to be involved with the vows of enlightening beings so as to accord with knowledge, always to be involved in the practices of enlightening beings so as to accomplish the task of all enlightening beings, always to be pervading all Buddha fields so as to live continuously through all ages, to remain in the conditional for the manifestation of the projections of all Buddhas, always to be hearing the teaching in order to visit in one's own body the places of death and birth of all Buddhas by the emanation-like action of enlightening beings, and to always be in contact with the light of knowledge so as to receive the teachings of all Buddhas in accord with knowledge of past, present, and future. Shall I go on or?
Yes.
Oh, okay. To this, Supratishita replied, "It is good that you have set your mind on supreme perfect enlightenment and ask about the qualities of Buddhahood, the qualities of omniscience, the qualities of independence. I have attained the enlightening liberation unobstructed door, going in and out of this unobstructed door liberation, practicing it, analyzing it, examining it, investigating it, and clarifying it. I have attained a light of knowledge called ultimate non-obstruction, whereby I am free from obstruction in awareness of the mental actions of all sentient beings, knowing where all sentient beings die and are born, entries into the channels to memory of past states, associations with all beings in future ages, communications to all sentient beings of the present time, knowledge of the conventions of languages of all sentient beings, cutting off the doubts of all sentient beings, comprehending the differences in the faculties of all sentient beings, approaching all sentient beings at appropriate times to guide them to full development, comprehension of time divisions as being conceptual, and in non-corporeal pervasion of the Buddha fields in the 10 directions, all by the attainment of non-being, non-abiding, and non-doing. By the realization of this mystic power of non-doing, I walk, stand, sit, and lie down in the sky, disappear and appear, produce smoke and flame. Being one, I become many. Being many, I become one. I become now visible, now invisible. I go through walls unhindered as through empty space. While sitting cross-legged, I travel in space like a bird on the wing. I go in and out of the earth as if in water. I walk on water unhindered as on the earth. I smoke and flame like a great conflagration. I cause even the earth to quake. With my hand, I polish even the sun and moon. Those bodies of great potency, power, and light. I envelop even up to the Brahma world in my body, covering the world with clouds of lights, the colors of all jewels. I emit clouds in the forms of all beings, emanating clouds of webs. Oh, that's enough.
No, it's the bolded part. Keep going down. See where it says going to the Buddhas.
Oh, okay. Go read from there.
Thank you.
Going to the Buddhas, I ceaselessly make offerings of all kinds of flowers, fragrances, garlands, unguents, robes, banners, pennants, canopies, nets, and ornaments. Those Buddhas explain, reveal, and elucidate, and I acknowledge and take up all that they teach. I also remember the purity of the Buddha lands of those Buddhas. As in the East, so also in all directions do I go to innumerable worlds, see the Buddhas teaching there, make offerings to them, acknowledge and take up what they say, and remember the purity of their Buddha lands. Also, all the beings who see me to whom I come are assured of supreme perfect enlightenment. Also, whatever beings I see, small or large, underdeveloped or well-developed, happy or unhappy, I adopt a corresponding physical form in order to guide them to maturity and perfection in the appropriate time. And all beings who come to me, I establish in this enlightening liberation, which is everywhere at once and which is the consummation of unerring power. Son, I know this enlightening liberation, unobstructed door, which is everywhere at once engaged in the service of the Buddhas, appropriate to the development of all beings. And then, should I skip down again?
Yes.
Go south, son, to the Dravidian city Vajrapura. There lives a grammarian named Mega. Go to him and ask him how an enlightening being is to learn and practice the conduct of enlightening beings.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
So make sure that you made a note or two there, and I suppose we could put it up one more time just to give people a quick glance through, Shufi, that same one. Just scroll through slowly. Thank you. So our next reader is Pearl. So Pearl, tell us about Mega.
He saw Mega at a crossroads in the middle of the city, sitting on a lion's seat to talk about the teaching, elucidating a scripture called Manifestation of Turning of the Wheel of Letters. Sudhana went up to him, paid his respects, and said, "Noble one, I have set my mind on supreme perfect enlightenment, but I do not know how an enlightening being is to learn and carry out the practice of enlightening beings. How is an enlightening being to preserve the determination for enlightenment? How does one develop a will that is firm in all states of existence and is indefatigable? How does one purify one's intent in accord with invincibility? How is a power of great compassion produced so that it never flags? How does one acquire mental command that is totally purified? How is a light of wisdom produced? Light free from obscurity in regard to meaning, principle, expression, and presence of mind. How does one acquire the power of recollection, keeping in mind the teachings of all Buddhas without confusion? How is a power of migration purified, illumining all the states of existence with the truth? How is an enlightening being's power of concentration perfected, intent on the ascertainment and discernment of the meanings of all principles? Now, Mega, out of respect for an enlightening being, got off his seat and prostrated himself before Sudana, then showered Sudana with golden flowers, precious jewels, and the finest sandalwood powders, covered him with hundreds of thousands of robes dyed in various colors, showered him with beautiful flowers of many various colors with pleasant scents, and honored him with various other offerings, then said to him, "It is good that you have set your mind on supreme perfect enlightenment. One who arouses the determination for supreme perfect enlightenment becomes engaged in the perpetuation of the lineage of Buddhas, intent on correctly communicating the tradition of dispassion, engaged in purifying the family of all lands, directed toward guiding the family of all sentient beings to perfection, engaged in properly accomplishing all the teachings and transcending all things, intent on harmony of all actions, engaged in the fulfillment of all practices of enlightening beings, directed toward preserving the continuity of all religious vows, engaged in following knowledge of all times, active in making devotion steadfast, the focus of attention of all Buddhas, near to equality with all Buddhas, appreciated by all enlightening beings, praised by all sages, honored by all the chief Brahmas, protected by all the chief gods, respected, welcomed, and praised by the chiefs of the various supernatural beings, sought out by all world rulers, one becomes very well suited for putting an end to the three kinds of bad conditions in all worlds, getting rid of all difficult conditions, inopportune for attaining enlightenment, getting beyond all states of destitution, attaining birth in celestial or human states, always seeking spiritual benefactors, consistently listening to the lofty Buddha teaching, purifying the will for enlightenment, cultivating the cause of the thought of enlightenment, gaining the illumination of the path of enlightening beings, following the knowledge of enlightening beings, and dwelling in the stages of enlightening beings. This is what I think of such a one. Enlightening beings do what is difficult to do. It is hard to get to actually see them. They are comforts to the world. Enlightening beings are the mothers and fathers of all sentient beings. Enlightening beings are an adornment to the world with its gods. Enlightening beings are a refuge for those oppressed by suffering. Enlightening beings are a place of rest for the protection of all sentient beings. Enlightening beings are the breath of life to those suffering all kinds of terrors and calamities. Enlightening beings are a wind protecting all sentient beings from the heat of the three evils. Enlightening beings are earth, causing the roots of goodness of all sentient beings to grow. Enlightening beings are an ocean, a repository of endless treasures of virtue. Enlightening beings are a sun, producing the light of knowledge. Enlightening beings are the polar mountain by virtue of the height of their roots of goodness. Enlightening beings are a moon, the moon of knowledge of the essence of enlightenment having risen in them. Enlightening beings are warriors crushing the armies of all demons. Enlightening beings are heroic, having reached the city of the state of independence. Enlightening beings are fire, annihilating the self-love of all sentient beings. Enlightening beings are clouds, causing vast clouds of true teaching to shower. Enlightening beings are rain, causing the sprouts of faculties such as faith to grow. Enlightening beings are navigators, showing the way on the ocean of truth. Enlightening beings are bridges conveying all sentient beings across the sea of mundane life, Enlightening beings are a pathway to the holy for all sentient beings. Mega sat back down at the seat of teaching and said to Sudana, I have attained the light of the spell of eloquence. I know the speech of all kinds of beings in a billion world universe. I know the variety of speech of each kind of being. I know the unity of speech of each kind of being. I know the mixture of speech of each kind of being. I know the terms, speech, and concepts of all creatures. I know the ideas of all sages. I know the ideas of all ignoble people. I know the speech of enlightening beings expressed according to the mentalities and languages of sentient beings. I enter into and focus on the oceans of utterances addressed to all sentient beings by the Buddhas of past, present, and future.
Thank you. That was appropriate for a poet to read that. Yeah. So take a look, yeah, and catch a phrase or a word, an image. Thank you. Our third reader is Nick, who shares some of Sudhana's encounters with a teacher named Sarada Vajja, who shares his realization of a perfection of wisdom called equanimity of the universal eye. Thank you, Nick.
It is marvelous, noble one, how profound this concentration is, how vast, how measureless its scope, how inconceivable its arrays of projections, how incomparable its light, how innumerable its manifestations, how unsurpassable its range, how pure its sphere, how it illumines everything equally, how it works for the benefit of infinite beings. In that it is directed to the extinction of the measureless mass of suffering of all sentient beings, to extinguish the sufferings of the destitute, to end the hellish states, to rescue beings from brutish states, to close the door on all conditions inopportune for enlightenment, to lead the way to heavenly states, to produce human and celestial pleasure and happiness. To foster experience of the pleasure of meditation, to increase happiness in the conditioned world, to show the way out of the mundane. It is set forth to illumine the cause of production of the aspiration of enlightenment, to develop the cause of production of provisions of virtue and knowledge, to increase the intensity of vast great compassion, to generate the power of great vows. For the attainment of the light of the path of enlightening beings, for the arrangement of the great vehicle of the transcendent ways, for the accomplishment of the supreme attainment of the great vehicle, for the accomplishment of the supreme attain, or for the vision of the knowledge of universally good action, for the attainment of the light of the knowledge of the stages of enlightening beings. For accomplishment of the purification of the array of means of emancipation in the practice of the vows of all enlightening beings, for the empowerment of accession to the sphere of omniscience. Noble one, what is the name of this concentration? Saradvaja said, There is a perfection of wisdom called equanimity of the universal eye, and this concentration is its light, called manifestation of universal purification. By the perfect accomplishment of the concentration of manifestation of universal purification, which springs from the light of the perfection of wisdom of equanimity of the universal eye, countless tens of hundreds of thousands of complete concentrations, beginning with the manifestation of universal purification, are born. Sudhana said, Is this the greatest range of this concentration? Saradavaja said, One who has fully accomplished this concentration has the power to discern worlds, to enter worlds, to travel freely in worlds, to adorn worlds, to purify worlds, to beautify worlds, to see Buddhas, to observe the grandeur of Buddhas, to know the emanations of Buddhas, to enter the powers of Buddhas, to plunge into the ocean of virtues of Buddhas, to receive the teachings of Buddhas, to follow the knowledge of the unity of all Buddhist teachings. To enter the ocean of congregations of Buddhas, to go anywhere in the 10 directions, to observe the teaching activity of the Buddhas, to see the realms of the Buddhas, to embrace all with great compassion, to pervade everywhere with love, to plunge tirelessly into the vision of Buddhas everywhere, to enter into the ocean of all beings, to know the ocean of faculties of all beings, to know the distinctions of faculties of all beings. I know this state of perfection of wisdom, but how can I know the practice, tell of the virtues, show the realm, reveal the sphere, describe the power of great vows, illumine the way of emancipation, elucidate the attainment, shed light on the path, follow the stream of concentration, know the range of mind, or reach equality with the knowledge of the enlightening beings who have entered the ocean of states of perfection of wisdom, who have clarified the cosmic perspective, who know where all teachings lead, who pervade an infinite sphere with vast awareness, who command the light of great mental control, who have purified the light of all spheres of concentration, who issue from the magical power of mystic knowledge, who have entered the inexhaustible ocean of intelligence, who speak pleasantly of the stages of enlightenment, who are refuges for all beings.
Thank you. Thank you. That was great. And finally, our fourth reader is Neil, who reads of Sudhana's encounter with Asha, the laywoman healer, who he finds in a park. And she says she's not visible to those who've not developed the basis of goodness, and that her realization and instruction is that enlightening beings do not aspire to enlightenment with the object of leading just one sentient being to perfection. Enlightening beings aspire to enlightenment for the sake of all sentient beings in all worlds and to lead them to perfection. So please, Neil.
Innumerable living beings in all states of existence came from the 10 directions to the laywoman Asha, who was seated on a golden throne adorned with a net of pearls from the ocean, wearing a tiara, her wrists adorned with bracelets of gold more beautiful than that of the heavens, her arms resplendent with jewels of glorious light, wearing earrings of pure deep blue gems, her head adorned with a veil of all kinds of jewels, her neck draped with a string of wish-fulfilling jewels. Those who came to her, affected with various sicknesses, filled with various afflictions, immersed in various views, covered by obstructions caused by actions, had their sicknesses alleviated when they saw Asha. Their minds freed from the defilement of afflictions, the thorns of views removed, the mountains of obstructions disintegrated, they entered the sphere of unobstructed purity, in which sphere of purity all their roots of goodness were clarified, the sprouts of spiritual faculties grew, and they entered the ocean of principles of omniscience. They recited the ocean of all mystic spells leading to mental command, came face to face with the ocean of all concentration media, began all holy vows, set all means of practice into operation, purified the means of accomplishing all virtues, proceeded according to wisdom characterized by all higher knowledges with unregressing breadth of mind, and became physically unattached and unobstructed, able to go everywhere. Then Sudhana entered the park, looking all over till he saw Asha sitting there. He went up to her, paid his respects, and said, "Noble one, I have set my mind on supreme perfect enlightenment, but I do not know how to learn and carry out the practice of enlightening beings. I hear you give instructions to enlightening beings, so please tell me how an enlightening being is to learn and carry out the practice of enlightening beings. She said, I have attained an enlightening liberation called characterized by sorrowless well-being. It is definitely beneficial to see me, hear me, attend me, live with me, remember me. I am not visible to those who have not developed the basis of goodness, who are not under the tutelage of spiritual benefactors, who are not in the care of the perfect Buddhas. Those who see me thereupon become irreversible in progress toward supreme perfect enlightenment. Furthermore, the Buddhas of the Ten Directions come here and sit on this jewel seat and expound the truth to me. I am always seeing Buddhas, hearing the truth, and meeting enlightening beings. The 84,000 quadrillion beings who live here in this park are all irreversible in progress toward supreme perfect enlightenment, having performed the same practices as I have. Any others who live here too will all be irreversible in progress toward supreme perfect enlightenment as enlightening beings of the same practice as I, who have entered the community of those who cannot regress. Sudana said, Noble One, how long ago did you set your mind on supreme perfect enlightenment? Asha said, Enlightening beings do not aspire to enlightenment with the object of leading just one sentient being to perfection, nor for the sake of 100 or 1,000 or 1,000,000 or 1,000,000,000 sentient beings, nor for any number of beings, nor for all the sentient beings in as many worlds as atoms in untold, inexpressibly vast numbers of billion world universes. Enlightening beings aspire to enlightenment for the sake of all sentient beings in all worlds to lead them to perfection. Enlightening beings do not aspire to enlightenment to propitiate, honor, and attend one Buddha or even as many Buddhas as atoms in untold worlds, or to propitiate, honor, and attend the lineage of Buddhas in one world, or the lineage of Buddhas in as many worlds as atoms in untold Buddha fields. Rather, enlightening beings aspire to enlightenment to lead all sentient beings without exception to full development. They wish to propitiate and honor and attend all Buddhas, to propitiate and honor and attend the successions of Buddhas in all worlds. They are determined to purify all Buddha lands. They strive to hold the teachings of all Buddhas. They are zealously devoted to following the variety of vows which are the points of departure of all Buddhas. They are determined to enter into the arrays of all Buddha lands. They wish to enter the oceans of assemblies of all Buddhas. They seek to go deeply into the ocean of mind of all sentient beings. They wish to know the spheres of faculties of all sentient beings. They aspire to penetrate the ocean of faculties of all sentient beings. They wish to enter into the succession of ages in all worlds. They are inspired with courage to cut off the continuity of afflictions and habit energies of all sentient beings. Their sun of knowledge rises to evaporate the ocean of afflictions caused by actions of all sentient beings. Their light of wisdom becomes manifest to know the ways of behavior of all sentient beings. Their cloud of great compassion gathers to extinguish the mass of fire of suffering of all sentient beings. To put it briefly, there are 10,000 incalculable numbers of such aspects of the conduct of the practice of enlightening beings, which are to be accomplished by an enlightening being. Furthermore, the practice of enlightening beings enters into all things for the attainment of knowledge. The practice of enlightening beings enters into all lands to thoroughly purify them. Because of this vow of mine, when the purification of the realm of desire is finished, my commitments will be finished. When the purification of the world is finished, my commitments will be finished. When all sentient beings' propensities to continue afflictive habits are ended, my commitments will be ended. Sudhana said, "What is the name of this liberation?" Asha said, "This liberation is called characterized by sorrowless well-being. I know this enlightening liberation, but how can I know the practice, tell of the virtues, convey the inconceivable enlightening skills, or show the infinite varieties of enlightening vows of the enlightening beings who have oceanic minds because of seeking all the Buddha teachings, who are like the polar mountain because of steadfast will, who are like the medicine good to see, because they free all sentient beings from the sicknesses of afflictions, who are like the sun because they eliminate the darkness of ignorance of all sentient beings, whose minds are like the earth because they are a refuge for all sentient beings, who are like air because they benefit all sentient beings, who are lamps producing the light of knowledge for all sentient beings, who are like clouds raining truth with a quiet sound, who are like the moon because they radiate a web of light beams of virtue, who are like gods because they protect all sentient beings.
Thank you. Thank you so much. To put it briefly, thank you. So let's go into breakout groups for 9 minutes, groups of three. Please share each person what sparked your curiosity, your interest, what word or phrase or image. And then come back after the 9 minutes and we will hear from people. Thank you so much for the readers. They're so wonderful. I really appreciated it. Shafi is going to unmute all of us. And if it's okay with people, I'd like to just, I can see you in the gallery view. To call your name, and if you'd like to say your word, We want to record the word or the phrase or the image. We want to make a poem out of it. So, after you speak, it's fine. You can mute yourself again. But let me start with Girja.
Okay. Clouds raining truth with a sweet sound.
Thank you. Andrea.
Steadfast.
Nice. Anne-Laure. You're not unmuted.
It's marvelous how profound this concentration is, how vast, how measureless its scope.
Donna Forgy.
Characterized by sorrowless well-being.
Eva.
With my hand, I polish even the sun and moon.
Alan. You're not muted. You're unmuted. Can we have
Sorry, spell of eloquence.
spell of eloquence? Okay, thank you. Donna.
I also had written down the spell of eloquence, but with Asha, I was struck by the atoms. That she went down to the atoms in all these the sentient beings, everything. That's it.
Thank you. Nora.
Roots of goodness.
Thank you. Audrey. You're not unmuted.
Did you say Harvey?
Audrey, I said.
Oh, I'm sorry. I couldn't.
It's all right, I'll
So
cut.
good old, I can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. To go anywhere in the 10 directions.
Thank you. James.
The thorns of views removed.
Pearl and Nick.
Live with me.
Ultimate non-obstruction.
Michael.
Equanimity of the universal eye.
Got that one. Yeah.
Roberta.
It's a big club. Come on in.
Martha
Abelson.
To embrace all with great compassion.
Henry.
Following the knowledge of enlightening beings.
Thank you. Julia. You're not unmuted yet.
Yeah. Illumines everywhere equally.
Illumines everywhere equally. Nice, thank you. Tracy Grubbs.
The attainment of non-being, non-abiding, and non-doing.
Sounds good. Yeah, thanks. Neil.
Getting rid of difficult conditions inopportune for attaining enlightenment.
Thank you. China.
Lie down in the sky and the unobstructed door. Thank you. So beautiful. Thank you.
Yeah.
Always in contact with reality.
Thank you. Meryl Collette.
Becoming one, I become many. Becoming many, I become one.
That's wonderful. Jane.
Enlightening beings are a refuge.
Yeah, thank you. Heidi.
Open door.
Robin.
Wheel of letters.
Wheel of letters.
Yes.
Thank you. Denise.
String of wish-fulfilling jewels.
You're muted.
Did you not hear me?
Dale.
Oh.
I misunderstood the assignment, but the thing about the door or the gate, I can't remember which one it was. It goes back and forth, whatever that phrase was.
The unobstructed door of liberation, I think it was. Yeah. Thank you. Joyce.
Navigators.
Yeah, thank you. Phil.
Releasing views, entering the ocean of generosity.
Oh, nice. Maya.
Oceans.
Said the rock oceans. Manny.
Not lose sight of Buddha, no matter what one is doing.
Amy.
Moon of the essence of goodness.
Mike.
Hundreds of thousands of robes.
Thank you. Candy. Yeah.
The realization of going in and out of the door of realization.
Yeah, nice. Thank
you. That's a good one. Jeez.
Christopher.
Jesus.
Intent on harmony of all activity.
Yeah, thank you. Sumon.
I smoke and flame.
You sure do. Yeah. Philip.
My first choice was recited by Nick, and my substitute choice was then recited by Tracy. So I'm going to say the mystic power of non-doing.
Thank you. Greg Alter.
Move through the unobstructed door. Close the door on inopportune states.
Yeah, let's do that. Yep. Thank you. Harvey.
The removal of all obstructions lead to perfection.
Great.
Hmm.
Jeff.
Ooh. Irreversible in progress.
May.
Purify the mental command, the navigator to the ocean of the truth.
Anyone? Oh, Stacy.
A great vow.
A great vow, yes. A great vow. Judith Howell.
Going in and out of the unobstructed door.
People liked that door, didn't they? Yeah. Donna Estes.
Purging the realm of desire, getting rid of the realm of desire.
Thank you. Judy Fleischman.
Who see me?
Say it one more time, sorry.
Who see me?
Who see me? Is that the same as Asha saying, come live me with me? Those who see me? Is it Asha?
You might not remember.
Tyrone and Beth, I see you there in the sun setting.
Way out of the vast mundane.
And my thought is the measureless universe.
Measureless universe, yes, thank you.
That's time.
I see Judith and Martha and Natalie and Jane G and GS. If any of you would like to speak, can you unmute?
I have one from a slightly different section. Endowment of distress and wishing, well-being here and there purified.
Okay, thank you.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Loving the truth in it.
Loving the truth in it. It might be the last one. Yeah. Thank you, Natalie.
Kathy.
Anybody else?
I walk, stand, sit, and lie down in the sky.
It's going to be a beautiful poem. I'll give it to Norman to read next week. I will be at Green Gulch with the Heart of Compassion Sangha Week. Is there someone else? I'm sorry, did I interrupt someone? Okay.
Can you say a line?
Pardon me?
You say your line?
I can't see who it is who's speaking, but please do say something.
It's Beth. I was just asking you, John, if you said your line.
I thought I gave the Dharma talk, actually.
More than a phrase.
That was okay. I was, you know, breathe in, breathe out, let go. Yeah.
You did it, John.
But I also want to say that, you know, a true confession, I get high just listening to it. I don't even have to be chanting it myself. But if you do chant it, I guarantee that you will feel something in your body. I know that, you know, Neil has been very devotedly doing this and inspired a couple of us to do it also. Please try it, even if it's just a couple of the paragraphs. It's really good for us. I'm sorry that I'm going to keep you late, but just doing the NMA and to do our well-being list.